Genealogy by Tim, Season 3, Episode 4, recorded April 29th, 2023. The GBT website will be receiving a server upgrade. My mom's birth certificate reveals her true first name. And my family history database is expanding rapidly as I enter all known descendants of Peter Mumma. All that coming up on Genealogy by Tim. The time has finally come to update my web server. The machine currently hosting my website and podcast is a 2005 HP Compaq NC6230, which I set up as a bit of an experiment back in the spring and summer of 2020. Having been up and running for about 3 years, I would say that the machine has exceeded expectations, given its age. It was produced as a business laptop computer about 18 years ago, and when it was made, it was quite a powerhouse, with a price tag of over $2,000. Technological advancements have left this machine behind, though, mainly because of its 32-bit processor. The reason for the upgrade is that I've recently come across two software packages that I wanted to try out, but that required a 64-bit processor. I've been interested over the past several weeks in installing a kind of a web forum so that website users could carry on conversations in between podcast episodes. And since I've been running up against my Google Drive limit repeatedly over the past couple of years, I thought I'd try to spin up an instance of Nextcloud to store my personal photographs. The Discourse Forum software does not support the 32-bit processor, and the Nextcloud software will require a 64-bit processor beginning with version 26. After installing version 25 of Nextcloud on my server, I received a warning. The next version of Nextcloud, version 26, will require a 64-bit processor. 32-bit will no longer be supported. And when I read that, I decided it was time for a change. Even my Drupal website software suffers from the 2038 problem. I didn't think I had to worry about that until the year 2028, but now I won't have to worry about it at all. I've already purchased the new machine that I intend to use as my next web server. It is a Hunson FMC/BM14 series fanless mini PC. The machine comes with an Intel Core i7 processor, and when purchased on Amazon.com, comes with various options for storage size and RAM. When purchased with storage, the machine comes pre-installed with Windows 11. I opted for the bare bones model, which comes without storage and without RAM, and I purchased my own storage and RAM to install later. I saw no need to purchase a Windows license when I intended to run a Linux server on the machine. So I separately purchased 16 gigabytes of RAM for the device, a 1 terabyte NVMe solid state drive, that'll be the primary hard drive, and a 1 terabyte mSATA solid state drive, that will be the backup drive. A major feature of the device is that it is fanless and runs silently, so I can keep it plugged in through Ethernet next to my router without having to hear constant fan noises running in my tiny one-bedroom apartment. The motherboard is housed in a metal case that's ribbed for passive cooling. I currently have the machine set up and it is now running Minecraft and Minetest servers. I will be transferring my website, WebTree, and podcast over to the machine in the coming weeks. The operating system I've chosen for the server is Fedora, the Fedora web server operating system, and this is to replace the Gentoo operating system currently running on the Compaq. I originally chose Gentoo for the Compaq because of its 32-bit processor. I was aware at the time that many Linux operating systems were dropping support for 32-bit hardware, and since Gentoo builds all of its code from source when possible, I kind of figured that would be the best choice going forward to retain support for the 32-bit processor. Now that I've upgraded to a 64-bit processor, I no longer want or need to compile software specifically for the device. So I chose Fedora for the new server because I've used it before and I've known it to be security-minded. When I first tested out Fedora on a GPD Pocket about 5 years ago, I was impressed that it came with SE Linux enforcing out of the box. That's not to say that other Linux distributions don't also have SE Linux running out of the box. I'm not sure which ones do and which ones don't, but Fedora has a reputation to me of being a very secure operating system. So I'll need a decent chunk of time to migrate the data over, either a 3-day weekend like Memorial Day weekend coming up, or I'll get started on it after school lets out in June. We'll see. But before long, we'll have that website running on a nice modern 64-bit machine with Nextcloud and no more 2038 problem, and it should serve the website well for years to come. So here's a fun story. Last month I ordered my grandmother's birth certificate because I wanted to include it in my application for the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania's First Families Lineage Society. We all knew my grandmother as Joan Harrison Graham, but the birth certificate said something a little different. Rewind about 11 or 12 years. When my sister gave birth to her first daughter, she gave her the middle name of Joanna because she heard, probably from my grandfather, that my grandmother was named Joanna on her birth certificate and went by Joan to distinguish her from her mother, who was also named Joanna. So my sister gave her daughter the middle name of Joanna in honor of our grandmother. After the fact, my sister came to me and asked, "Hey, yeah, isn't that my mom's real first name, Joanna?" And I told her I had not heard about this. I didn't have any documents saying this. Not a bad name in any case, because it is our great-grandmother's name, but I didn't have any documents to show that our grandmother Joan's real name was Joanna. I didn't have any documents saying that until now. When I received my grandparents' birth certificates in the mail a couple weeks ago, I was pleased to see that Joanna is, in fact, Mom's given first name. I immediately snapped a photo of the document and sent it to my sister, and I said, "Rest easy, you did the right thing." Not sure where you heard the original information, probably from my grandfather, but if you were intending to honor our grandmother by naming your daughter Joanna in her middle name, you did the right thing, because documents show that that's what it was. I'm considering in the coming weeks ordering copies of my parents' birth certificates just to have in my collection and to include in my First Families application. I didn't need these to complete my application for Sons of the American Revolution back in 2018, but if I can get them to make a more complete application, then why not? And I will keep you updated on my progress with that application. One final update, and the main event for the month of April is the massive expansion of my family history database to include as many descendants as possible of Peter Mumma, who immigrated to what is now the United States back in 1748. You see, I plan to be doing a lot of Mumma research when I visit Lancaster this summer. And in preparation of that research, I decided to incorporate as much information as I could from the Mumma.org website into my own database. And this would give me a kind of a framework to work within and something to expand upon as I gathered the documents and photographs for this family line. So this month I went all in, spending as much of my free time as I could, adding as many names as I could to my database, and the source being Mumma.org, which has been maintained by Doug Mumma since I've been visiting the site over a decade ago, and I just thought to myself, well, there's no telling exactly how much longer the site will be around. I've seen sites like this come and go, so I decided, let me throw myself into getting as much information from this site as I could while it's still up. Now, to my delight, sometime over the past couple weeks, Mr. Doug Mumma updated his site and included a whole new section with information on the Caldewich family database. So it's good to see that the site is actively maintained and updated. I don't think there's any immediate threat of the site going down, but it's still good to have the information. And just to give you an idea of the extent of the work I've done, adding information from Mr. Mumma's site to my database, if you look at the website now, currently lists 1,788 individuals. Since I've been shoveling all this new information into my database, it currently sits at 2,677 individuals, so that's about 900 or so additional people I've added over the past month. Many of these people are name only, name relationships, especially the more recent people and potentially living people. But as you go back in the generations, there is a lot more information. Birth date, death date. I haven't been adding marriage dates for the sake of efficiency, but I may come back later on and fill those in. And Mr. Mumma left his email address on the site, and I will very soon be contacting him to tell him just how useful his site has been for me and to perhaps include my name among his list of researchers. Now, I was scrambling this month to get as many names as I could in my database and delaying the recording of this podcast so that hopefully I could tell you, hey, I've got this section all complete and I'm going to be moving on to that section, but no such luck. I was hoping to tell you that I have all the descendants of Peter Mumma Jr., who was born in 1771 and died sometime around or after 1850. But I've been working and working and working and still haven't gotten all of his descendants, which number over 1,000 at this point. And then after I finish his descendants, he also has 5 siblings, all of whom have descendants of theirs. So to get all of the names from mumma.org into my database would be a very large undertaking. Now, it could be possible that Mr. Mumma, if I email him, he could provide a GEDCOM file that I could import into my database and save me a lot of manual entry. But I still don't think I want to do that, even if I could do that, even if Mr. Doug Mumma were to provide such a file, I don't think I would use it. I kind of like getting in there, manually entering things, knowing all of the things that I enter, seeing them all. I kind of feel it's a little, I guess maybe neglectful might be the word, to just download a file and be like, oh, that's it, that's the file, and not even know who's in there, or not even have the time to be able to navigate everything I entered. At least if I manually enter it, I can say, I've seen all the names, I've seen all the dates, I entered them myself. Now, there is some additional information on the Mumma family at the Global Family Tree on familysearch.org. I've looked through it, and I still consider Mr. Doug Mumma's site to be sort of the gold standard of research, where pretty much everything asserted is very well documented. There are several things on the FamilySearch family tree that are stated but not that well documented. And in fact, as of a couple months ago, if you went back up the paternal line of Peter Mumma, it actually ran into an infinite loop. Someone in there put a person as his own grandfather or great-grandfather, and you could just go back up the paternal line forever and ever. I believe that situation may have been fixed, but you can see the potential for error when you have a lot of people working on a tree together, and some have a better sense of documentation than others. So my plan is to go through as much of Doug Mumma's site as I can, and then maybe fill in some missing pieces with anything from the FamilySearch family tree that I find well documented enough to supplement the work that Mr. Mumma has done. Now, for me, one of my great joys in family history research is taking that really good gravestone photograph of a very old grave. That's sort of the first thing I want to do with all this information when I get out to Lancaster this summer, is take some good gravestone pictures. But unfortunately, as I go through this data, I'm not finding a whole lot of Mumma surname burial locations that are nearby. I mean, as I mentioned in last month's podcast, a lot of mummers went out to Ohio. Several others went out to Cambria County, which is kind of outside the destination where I want to travel this summer. Direct mumma ancestor gravestones are probably too distant to know for sure where they are. I don't think I'll be able to get photographs of my direct mumma ancestors' gravestones. So far, the closest candidates for good gravestone photography, if I go out to Lancaster, will be first cousins of Anna Mumma. And to get to Anna Mumma through my family tree, she is my fourth great-grandmother. My paternal grandmother is Joan Harrison, whom we heard about earlier in the show. Her paternal grandmother was Cora Klein. Cora Klein's maternal grandmother was Anna Mumma. And Anna Mumma's father was Peter Mumma Jr., and his father, Peter Mumma, was the original immigrant who came to America in 1748. Peter Mumma and his son Peter Mumma Jr.'s gravestones, I don't know if I'll be able to find. And most of Anna Mumma's male siblings moved away. She had some female siblings stay in the area, for example, the Lockard family. I'll be able to take good pictures of those gravestones. But to get a good gravestone with the name Mumma on it, so far my best bet is to go with Anna Mumma's cousin. Peter Mumma Jr. had a brother, Frederick. Frederick had some children who stayed in the area. One of them was a John C. Mumma who died in 1850. Another is another Peter Mumma who died in 1877. Both of these mummas have gravestones that I can photograph, and I look forward to doing that this summer. And if over the course of the next month I discover any closer mumma relatives whose gravestones I can photograph, I will let you know in the May podcast. And I will tell you all about my plans for photographing those stones. And that just about does it for this month. Over the course of the next several weeks, I will be continuing the effort to add as many mumma descendants as I can to my database in preparation of my trip to Lancaster this summer. And I'll be doing more work on my First Families application for the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania, and you'll hear all about my progress in next month's podcast. Until then, keep on digging. Your next family history adventure awaits.